participants and not necessarily those of Absolute Broadcasting, its staff, or advertisers. It's time for Israel is Real. Two Israelis putting a human face on all things Israel. Rahel and Sonia focus on life in modern 21st century Israel, telling the stories of ordinary people living in, loving, and in support of an extraordinary land. Israel is Real is a community-supported program featuring interviews with local, national, and international celebrities, personal life stories, and call-ins. Learn a new Hebrew word every week. Israel is Real. Every Friday on 1590 WSMN, Nashua's News and Talk. And now, your hosts, Rahel and Sonia.
Okay, Tom, good morning. We're Rachel.
And Sonia.
And this is Israel, Israel, the free voice for Israel. Boker Tov, lekol ha'mazinim.
Tzoraim tovim b'Yisrael.
From WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk. You can hear us on the internet at WSMNradio.com. And you can also hear us. That's it.
Did it. 1590.
I'm so used to saying so many more things, and I got stuck there. WSMN 1590 AM, and we're broadcasting out of Nashua, New Hampshire. Boker Tov, Sonia.
Boker Tov.
It's a beautiful day today, I have to admit. It's no longer 9 degrees outside. It's working up to 50, I think, today. So it's like a spring day. So we're going to go right into our Hebrew word.
Which is Chazon Ha'atzamot Ha'yeveshot.
Wow. Say that again.
Chazon Ha'atzamot Ha'yeveshot.
Okay. Chazon Ha'atzamot Ha'yeveshot.
Ha'yeveshot, yes. The prophet Ezekiel saw a vision of vast numbers of people resurrected to life again as physical human beings. The prophet portrayed to us a preview of the rebirth of the state of Israel in a unique analogy that has become an epic 20th century miracle of enormous significance.
That sounds exciting.
Uh-huh. Ezekiel was given a fore glimpse of Israeli history that has come full circle. God took Ezekiel down into the midst of a valley that was completely filled with dry, bleached, and old, weathered bones. And then he saw a vision how the bones are coming
to life again. Mm-hmm.
So while we are speaking about dry bones in the morning, it's such a beautiful morning today.
I don't know. I think we're going to have to hear a little bit of music to give us a hint.
Mm-hmm. These bones are going to rise again. Made them out of mud and a little bit of sand. These bones are going to rise again. Lord, I knew it, didn't I know it? These bones are going to rise again. Lord, I knew it, didn't I know it? These bones are going to rise again. The Lord, he thought he'd make a woman too. These bones.
A big
well, that was a surprise.
Right.
Okay. Well, we have a reason, and I'm not sure it's really connected to those kinds of songs, but we'll see. Our guest today, his name is Yaakov, also known as Bones Kirshen. He's a cartoonist, but he calls himself another Brooklyn boy. He graduated from Queens College, and he wrote and drew funny cards for Norcross. And after dismissal for loudness and jocular attitude, he became a freelance gag cartoonist for the former Mad Magazine guys, who were then doing Cracked. Oh, yeah, I remember Cracked. He moved on to doing cartoons for Playboy, and he was included in several Best of Playboy anthologies. Then he fell in with the anti-Vietnam War folks, and I remember those days, and was actually elected delegate to the 1968 Democratic Convention in Chicago, where, in spite of all the riots, he was unable to get arrested. In 1971, he escaped, and he moved to Israel. He changed his first name from Jerry to Yaakov, And in 1973, he began drawing a daily editorial strip called Dry Bones. In 2003, this tune was celebrated, and it was celebrating its 30th year in the Jerusalem Post. And it's been reprinted or quoted by the New York Times, Time Magazine, LA Times, CBS, AP, and all sorts of other publications. So we bring to our listeners today the Honorable Mr. Yaakov Kershon. Boker Tov. Or Tzoraim Tovim.
Yes, yes.
That's a beautiful resume.
And soon to be Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom, right. Soon to be. When is Shabbat coming in today?
I have no idea, but this phone call is the last thing I'll be doing.
Well,
I can still see a blue sky out of my window and waving palm trees, and I'm a 12-minute walk from the Mediterranean beach in a little town called Herzliya Pituach.
Really? You're in Herzliya Pituach?
Yes. It's a 20-minute drive north of Tel Aviv. Except on a Thursday night when it's an hour and a half drive because everybody's beating it out of town. And so here we are.
Well,
what can I do for you?
Well,
welcome
maybe
for coming.
Yeah, thank you for being here, first of all. How about telling us a little bit of background, you know, how you got to being you and how you evolved into Mr. Drybones?
Okay, let's see. I just gave a presentation to the Conference of Presidents of Major Jewish Organizations. They have their annual briefing in Jerusalem, and they asked me to brief them on a topic. And the topic I had was a 46-minute presentation. And I thought, well, I've got to cut it down a bit. And then just before I appeared, they explained to me that I now had 12 minutes. So I had to cut the 46 minutes down to 12 minutes. And when I got there, there was a problem. And they said, okay, you have 7 minutes. So I'm in, and I did it. Okay, so you wanted me to tell you the whole life story of Dry Bones, and you probably want me to do it in a minute and a half.
Three minutes.
Right, okay. So here I am, a cartoonist in America, growing up basically with the American dream is that we can do anything if you really want to.
Yeah,
truth, justice, and the American way, and all of that came from the Jewish invention of the Superman. And basically, in 1938, the year I was born, Superman was born. And I was created by Jewish creators, and he was created by Jewish creators. And he brought a message that we come from an ancient civilization that is lost, and here we are all in America, and we have to not show our real powers, work in the media, and if you're going to do tzedakah, you do it anonymously. And that image of what to be a Superman was the American Jewish version. Of course, the European version was Nazism. And so that part of Jewish culture affected especially Jews, liberal Jews, and we try to help the world and all like that. And then in the 60s, when everybody got radicalized, I got radicalized, and I began to wonder about certain things. I began to wonder about why I could go to an art library and find tons of books on Eskimo art and Navajo Indian art. But Jewish art, there really wasn't anything there. So I thought, hey, I'll write a book about Jewish art. And when I did that, I learned that Jewish art was filled with basically symbolism and Jewish symbols, graphic symbols. And I spent a lot of time in the 42nd Street Library going through, there's a Jewish collection, Judaica collection. And then I began to see that, hey, there were things that that were really super mystical, magical, and one was the chariot described in the book of Ezekiel. And so I began to read the book of Ezekiel and came to understand the vision of the dry bones and sat down and read the book of Ezekiel as it was a letter written by a Jew who lived 2,600 years ago. And if you just sit and read that letter, that book he wrote, you get a very interesting view of history. And then if you look at the news, you see that, oh my goodness, the history he said was going to happened. And that's when I realized that, like Superman, I had been formed with the idea that there was a lost civilization. And suddenly it became obvious that Krypton was back alive in the vision of dry bones. So I packed up my family and I came back to Krypton, which is why I'm 12 miles from the Mediterranean, 12 minutes from the Mediterranean.
Wow. Now,
does that make sense?
It's beautiful.
Perfect sense.
It is beautiful.
Well, let's talk about that, the character of dry bones. I mean, you're telling us that it was sort of a spin-off of Ezekiel, or
I'm saying that the name, my main character's name is Shuldig.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Shuldig.
His name is Mr. Shuldig. And Shuldig in Yiddish means blame. So if you say, I am Shuldig, it means I'm to blame. And one of the things I learned when I got to Israel is whenever you talk to anybody, you found out that they were not to blame. So I thought I would have a character who would get up and say, I did it, it's my fault, I'm Shuldig. So now the name of the strip is Dry Bones because Ezekiel laid out everything step by step, unbelievable. Except he left out certain things like bus drivers and the national character and like that. So I thought I would just fill in those details that Ezekiel didn't have room to fill in.
Nice.
So that's why it's dry bones.
The censor cut this out.
Nice. Now, yes. Since 1971, you've been in Israel, and so that gives you a very good length of time to be able to understand the
enough already.
Exactly.
So, can I go home now?
So
secret is that Israel is a wonderful, delightful, alive place. A place when you can sit down with people and they disagree with you, you can argue with them, and they don't get offended. They argue back.
Oh, I love that part of Israel. Yeah.
Right. And no matter what you say, someone's going to argue with you. So
that's for sure.
Never, right.
Yeah, so
and
tell us about that.
And you'll continue your fest, you know. If you are having a dinner together, you'll continue the dinner, and the next week will come again with the same exactly arguments.
So tell us about Shuldig, though. Is he representative then of Israel, or
I have a cast of characters. First of all, if anybody wants to see what's happening, in Dry Bones started in 1973, speaking basically to new immigrants and Israeli business people through the pages of the Jerusalem Post. And back then, the only way you could communicate to people was by having stuff pressed in ink onto dead trees, i.e. paper. And when people made newspapers, there was hot lead poured into molds, and it was, from these days, sort of primitive. Now I can sit at home and do a cartoon and pop it up onto the internet and get it out all over the world. So where people can see me today is at drybonesblog.com. And 3 days a week, I do a new cartoon. And 2 days a week, I schlep out stuff from 20 years ago, 30 years ago. And people comment, and I explain about the cartoons. And I'm reaching a gazillion more people than ever before. But instead of them all being centrally located, sitting in Israel, I find that I'm talking to Egyptians and Iraqis and American Jews and Indians, and bizarre. It's a bizarre new world.
What kind of feedback do you get from these world fans?
It's very interesting. I get had a letter from an Indian medical student. I think he was a medical student. And he explained that he had gone through the entire educational system in India and knew nothing really about the Middle East, which is not surprising because people who go through the entire educational system in America know nothing about India and Bangladesh and like that. And he wrote about how he was carefully following Dry Bones so he could at last understand the Middle East.
Nice.
And it's not a matter of feedback. It's a matter of that there's a new kind of community out there, and we can all touch each other through this unbelievable revolution. And there was the Industrial Revolution. There was a revolution of writing, and writing meant that if I spoke to you, you would hear me. But if I wrote it down, then after I was dead, people could read my thoughts. And then we went to an industrial revolution that we dealt with manufacturing. And then we went to a telephone revolution. All of a sudden, someone in Paris could pick up a phone and talk to someone in New York. And then there was that expanded to fax, so you could send stuff along lines. And then wireless. And so here we are. I'm sitting on the other side of the world, and we're talking on telephone lines, and you're putting it out so it goes out onto an internet. And suddenly, instead of us being separated by geography, we're all connected by this new thing. And cartoons are going to play a bigger and bigger role in it, and that means there's going to be a lot more anti-Semitism. And so here we are.
So what does Dry Bones have to say about the new anti-Semitic movement?
Well, I think I've got a lot to say about it. It reminds me, I like to talk in jokes because in 2009 I was made an artist in residence and a fellow at the Yale Initiative for the Interdisciplinary Study of Anti-Semitism. And I began to study anti-Semitism in cartoons. And I came to understand that anti-Semitism is a virus. It's a cultural virus. And when someone has a virus, they sneeze. And they don't sneeze because they want to. They sneeze because they're infected. And if the virus is really dangerous, like rabies, a dog that has rabies goes and bites other dogs, not because he wants to, but because the virus makes him do it. So people who are involved in the boycott, divestment movement, the delegitimizers, these people are spreading a virus, and most of them are infected with that virus. So bringing the facts and talking to these people with logic will have no more effect than a rabid dog coming to attack you and you say, sit, stay. He's not going to listen to you because he's out of control. He's under the control of a virus. So that sounds depressing, but it's not depressing. That's the good news. What's the good news? The good news is a guy goes to a doctor, and it's in the middle of winter, and he comes in, and he says, Doctor, I have this terrible cold, terrible head cold. What should I do? Doctor says, I'm going to splash ice water on you, and I want you to walk around the block 3 times and then come back. And the guy says, walk around the block 3 times with ice water. This is going to cure my cold? He says, no. This is good. We can't do anything for a cold, but this will give you pneumonia, and pneumonia we can cure. So once we understand that it's a virus, we know how to deal with viruses. We know that viruses are contagious. So the first thing when you deal with a virus is you want to stop the means of contagion. Okay? And number two, you want to isolate the strains of contagion. And you want to understand how the virus adjusts and becomes Holocaust resistant and then resistant to other changes. And what I've done is to make a study of this, and I think we have a fairly simple job ahead of us.
Really?
And, yeah, I really do think so. I think once we can show the nature of this cultural virus and what its purposes are, I'm coming to the States in May to do a trip across the States, telling people about this. I've got a secret website that I shouldn't even tell you about. It's called secretcodeshiddenwar.com.
Secretcodeshiddenwar.com.
.com, okay. Yeah. What I discovered is that if you take hundreds and hundreds of anti-Semitic cartoons and examine them, you find that there are three families of codes. And one family is dehumanizing, which basically says Jews are not human beings. They are demonic and vampires and like that. And the second is stereotyping, meaning that they how they act. Jews love money and control the banks and control the media. And once you have demonic, baby-killing, fiendish, powerful money owner controllers of the media, then you're presenting a demon. And you present a demon to the public, and then you say, we're the only ones who can fight this demon. And that's basically the structure of the use of this, the reason to spread this virus. And this virus has been spread by extreme left, extreme right, extreme religious, extreme anti-religious. So from Nazis to Stalinists to skinheads to Islamists. And every movement that uses this attack becomes infected by it. So if you say, you know, the Nazis were the National Socialist Party. They had a program. Nobody knows what the program was because they became consumed like a rabid dog. Once you use anti-Semitism, it backs up and infects you. Mm. So we have the Islamists. They never talk about Allah. They never talk about the evil of interest rates. More and more, all they do is talk about the Jews. They have become infected. They have lost their reason. They are rapidly infecting themselves and others. And in the process, they've become, from bombing us, they've gone to bombing themselves, and they're just torn apart with hatred and violence because they've been infected.
Mr. Yaakov Kershen, we have to go out for a station break, and we can continue after the break. We're WSMN 1590. Israel is real.
Shoulder bone.
is Israel is Real on WSMN 1590 and WSMNradio.com. We are enjoying your donations. They keep us on the air, and we'd love to have some more of those donations. So if you can do that, please send a check to Absolute Broadcasting. Sorry, write the check to Absolute Broadcasting. Send it to our personal Israel Israel address at P.O. Box 236, Milford, New Hampshire, 03055. Again, write the check to Absolute Broadcasting and send it to Israel Israel at P.O. Box 236, Milford, New Hampshire, 03055. The patent and trademark law firm of Vern Main and Associates is a local firm with a global practice, and it's pleased to announce its new office location at 547 Amherst Street in Nashua and on the web at www.vernmain.com. For professional legal counseling on all intellectual property matters, contact the legal specialists at Vern Main and Associates at their offices on 547 Amherst Street in Nashua, New Hampshire. You can also find them again on the web at vernmain.com. That's vernmaine.com.
Did you know that Vision is an organization that educates our community about the little country of Israel? Did you know that Israel is approximately about the size of New Jersey? And did you know who said, who can challenge the right of the Jews in Palestine? Good Lord, historically, it is really your country. It was Yosef Daya El-Khalidi, mayor of Jerusalem in 1899. In order to receive Vision's emails alert and be informed about the Vision educational activities and opportunities, please visit Vision website at www.newhampshireforisrael.org. That's www.nh4israel.org.
Please take a moment to remember that there was a big fire in Israel, and you can help retree the forests, and you can do that by going to www.jnf.org, the Jewish National Fund. That's JNF like Frank .org.
And Rachel is spreading beautiful music across the globe. To hear Rachel's unique sounds and to book Rachel to perform for you live, go to www.rachelmusic.net. That's www.rachelmusic.net.
Dry bones, easy gloom, cried them. Dry bones, now hear the word of the Lord. Easy gloom, connect to them. Dry bones, easy gloom, connect to them.
We're back on WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk. This is Israel is Real, the free voice for Israel. We are speaking today with the Honorable Yaakov Kershen, creator of the cartoon Dry Bones.
Mr. Kershen, this is Sonia again, and I like very much the metaphoric way that you describe antisemitism. Mm-hmm. However, if I will go with this metaphor,
I don't think it's a metaphor.
No, but, you know, going to the doctor, etc.
I don't think it's a metaphor. I think it is a virus. When we say that you've done an interesting cartoon, and then people come to me and say, oh, I keep getting this cartoon. My cousin sent it to me. Friends, enough. Everybody's sending me this cartoon. I say it's gone viral. We talk about viral marketing. We talk about having a virus in your computer.
Right.
What is a virus? A virus is something that replicates itself.
Right.
Anti-Semitism is a behavioral, cultural virus.
But
it's not a metaphor. My
thing is that when I am sick, I'm going to the doctor. I'm trying to treat myself.
Okay.
Here, when the people have this virus called antisemitism,
right,
they are sure that they are healthy. How, you understand, I need some responsibility, not only from my own, but also from the other side. You need to know that you are sick, period. How we are
That's
making
right.
this.
That's right. That's right. Well, I have basically an outline of how to do that, but once you understand that it is a virus, once you understand, for example, in the Haggadah, here we have a document that generation after generation, we tell the story of coming out of slavery into freedom. So why, in the middle of all of that, does it say, Kol Dor V'Dor? In the middle of it, it says, in every generation they will rise up to destroy you. That's a really weird thing. Why did they put that in there? You know why? Because they understood the first part of the puzzle. The puzzle is when they come to get you and they are demonizing you and saying, it's because you way that treated the Palestinians, or it's the way you acted towards these people, or it's because you do this. It's because in every generation they will rise up against you tells you that whatever reason is given at this part of time, this is not the reason. Something that comes cyclically, comes every generation. Just like the flu comes every September, anti-Semitism comes every generation. Okay? And once we understand that it is a virus, then we have to deal with how you deal with viruses. If you have an antivirus program in your computer, the first thing you do is you scan your computer. So we have to develop ways that people can scan their beliefs to see if they are infected.
A good idea. I like it.
and to understand that part of the virus that we are facing adjusts. See, up until 1967, the other side thought that they could destroy Israel with armies. In 1967, they realized that they couldn't. So the virus changed. And what the virus did, the virus photoshopped history and geography. Okay? What happened was the geography. It used to be the problem of Israel and the Arab states. It's now the Israel-Palestine problem. Everybody talks about the problem with Palestine. Because if you talked about Israel and the Arab states, Israel would be this one tiny sliver, and there's 270 million Arabs. If you add Turkey, and you add Iran, and you add Afghanistan, Pakistan, and all like that, you've got like a billion people against us. But if you turn it into the Palestine problem, then you've wiped out all of that. And if you take the history now, the argument starts with something that happened in the 20th century. The whole narrative is about the Holocaust and after the Holocaust and all like that. And therefore, we don't even have the narrative because the opposing narrative has replaced it. So we've got to rebuild the narrative. So if I ask questions of people like, why is the country called Israel? Why doesn't it jump into your mind to answer me? If I say, why are Jews called Jews? It's not on the top of our consciousness. If we say, what's the story of our people? Oh, it starts with Abraham. You know, well, Abraham is the father of the Ishmaelites, and we all share with Abraham, and it's one big family. And we have. It doesn't start with Abraham. It starts with a man named Israel. And he lived 3,800 years ago, and he had a wife, Leah, and a wife, Rachel, and he had 12 sons, and they were the children of Israel. When he was born, he was given the name Yaakov. His name was changed to Israel. And we are the children of Israel, the descendants of Israel. We live in the land of Israel, and we have always been the indigenous people of Israel. And that's why the country is called Israel. And unless we understand that just trippingly obviously, then we have been infected with a distortion. Hmm. So part of my job is to now build cartoon teachings and websites and stuff to and to alert everyone that we have to recognize the virus and what the virus has done and what it has done to us.
So if we're using the cartoon as a tool, as an educational tool, and which is very effective because humor, number one, is very effective, and it's a good way to start a conversation. And we know that there's...
It's a good way to stick ideas into people's heads without them having a defense mechanism. If I can make you laugh, I can sneak it into your head.
Right. Mr. Yaakov Kershen, right.
So if I say to you, Israel is the only country in the world where we have armed guards at cafes to shoot people to prevent them from committing suicide. Right?
Right?
And if you do that in a cartoon, people laugh.
Yeah.
And why do they laugh? Because they realize that they're not shooting people to prevent them from committing suicide. They're terrorists. So instead of arguing, well, they're not suicide bombers, they're homicide bombers, and getting involved in all that argument, if you can make a joke that your enemy laughs at for that moment, they've got it. It's in their head.
So, Yaakov Kershen, I want to ask you, because we've got about, I don't know how long, another 7-8 minutes or so, 10 minutes. I wanted to, so we have a conflict. We know that there's a virus, and we're going to now try and attack that virus and move it. So we want to look a little bit beyond what happens, how we're now getting beyond the conflict a little bit. What have we got to look forward to?
I don't understand the question.
Ah.
First of all, who is we?
We the Jews.
Israel? Is we the Jews?
Let's say we the Jews. You know, because we've been living with it longest. But let's say, you know, now it's this virus is spreading everywhere. You know, the infidel, whatever, whoever it is. You know, whoever's the enemy at the time. What kind of a world are we looking at?
We're looking, as we have since Sinai, at a world in which we have brought culture and morality, and that has come down to Western civilization, and that there is a force that is trying, a totalitarian evil force that is trying to fight us and to take over society. And whether that was the medieval church through the Inquisitions, or whether that was the Nazis or the Stalinists or the skinheads or the Islamists, they are using this virus to take over society. And therefore, society has to be warned, not the Jews. If Islamism was not anti-Semitic, they said, hey, listen, the Jews, they don't believe in Jesus. Let them, you know, let them be creative. Let them plant their trees. Who cares about them? And the Islamists just pushed Islamism, then you would have every women's organization demonstrating against them, every gay and lesbian organization, every journalist would be against their repressiveness, every Christian church would be against them, every Baha'i would be against them, every Mormon would be against them, every free thinker, every college professor. But all of these people who are threatened, all of these interest groups, all of these people who enjoy freedom in Western societies are frozen. They are frozen because that is the effect of the anti-Semitism. And the goal is not to kill the Jews. The goal is to take over society. And it's like all of Western society is sitting in a big arena. And in the center is a boxing match. And there's the Jews and the anti-Jews. And everybody is watching the boxing match. And meanwhile, while they sit frozen in the audience, their pockets are being picked. So we have to alert not the Jews, we have to alert the gays, the lesbians, the feminists, the religious right, the religious left, socialists, free thinkers, everybody, that they are in danger.
Yeah. Is it upon us only, though, the Jews? I mean, we've been living with it the longest, and we understand it.
We haven't understood it. We thought all along that it was something designed to attack us. We are a tool. Anti-Semitism is a tool to mesmerize the public into looking at this fictitious danger and to be frozen. How could you have female genital mutilation and not a single woman's group dealing with it? How could you have repression of gays and lesbians and not have a single gay and lesbian group dealing with it? Why is everyone silent? It's because they're being infected. Mm-hmm. For their own survival, they have to understand that Israel Apartheid Week is spreading a virus that is designed to make them look at a fictitious enemy so that they can be subverted, so that their freedoms can be taken away. And it's our job to let them know and to reach those people. I'm being sponsored by Young Israel and by a new organization called Z Street.
And, oh, good, yes.
Okay, and you look at an organization like J Street, which is a purveyor of the virus.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right? And so there needs to be a Zionist group, and that Z Street needs to be made up of gays and lesbians and Christians and Upper West Side liberals and painters and writers and teachers, those that get it.
Right.
You know, so mm-hmm. someplace some feminist organization where we'll be able to grab some of them and say, your community is threatened. So if you want Western society to protect itself, then you've got to protect its outpost in the middle of the Middle East. And I've just done my Purim cartoon, which is Mr. Schuldig. Yes, Mr. Schuldig in a big clown jester hat and a mask holding up a sign saying, "Democracy sweeps Muslim lands."
It's just so such an oxymoron.
My wife looks over my shoulder and she says, "Wait a minute, is that supposed to be a nasty joke?" And I said, "Take it the way you got it."
That's what we're about to see this week, huh? Today.
Yeah, no, not this week, but for Purim.
Yeah.
You know, Jewish humor, it's the way we talk. And it goes, at some point I wanted to find the oldest Jewish joke in the world, and I found it, and it's in the Bible. And it's when we came out of Egypt and we come to the shores of the Red Sea and we turn around and there's 600 Egyptian war chariots and we've been marching out of Egypt and we're about to die. They're going to kill us. And if Goyim had written the Bible, it would say, and the people turned to Moses, say, "Bring forth yet another miracle." But what it says in the Bible is, and they turned to Moses and said, "Were there no graves in Egypt? You brought us into the desert to die." And it's a joke. My God, it's a joke. They didn't know that they were at the start of Jewish history. They thought this is as bad as it could get. Right. They didn't know it could get worse. So I'm really optimistic. There are people who say that this situation we're in is really terrible. But I think it's much better than it's going to be.
Oh, thank you for that lovely outlook. Is that a promise or a threat?
As long as we can continue to communicate with humor, we can continue sailing this Jewish ship onto the light that we're going to come to. And so if Ezekiel says the whole world is going to come against us and we're going to be saved at the last moment, then when the whole world comes against us, I'm a totally secular, non-believing Jew. But what Ezekiel said is going to happen. And he was such a bozo, he didn't know he lived in the past. He thought he lived in the present. We lived in the future. But that's a different problem.
You know, I'm going to a class tomorrow where we're actually going to go through the whole vision of Ezekiel, so it's kind of appropriate, timely that
well,
you're...
Well, if you divorce yourself from all of the religious interpretation and you just read it, you realize it's a story about time travel, and you realize that Ezekiel is taken in a machine that flies, and that he's also taken to the future, and that he sees the temple of the future. And they tell him that they've brought him there so he can measure the temple and bring it back and write it down so that when it comes time to build the temple, we'll know what temple will have been built and therefore should be built. And the only way to understand that is if you really get heavy into modern quantum physics that says that's possible.
Well, Yaakov,
that's pretty scary.
Yaakov Kirshen, we are going to have, we've come to the end of our short hour. We wish we had more time. It's been
drybonesblog.com.
Yeah, please tell us. Drybonesblog.com. I encourage everybody to sign up, subscribe, get the daily news. And we really, really thank you for being on our show. Maybe we'll have an opportunity again. By the way, why don't you tell people, where will you be in May?
I don't know yet where I'm going to be in May. It's still sort of open, but if people maybe want me to come to a particular place or whatever, they should go to drybonesblog.com, and I'll be posting information about it and how to get me to come to your neighborhood.
We want you here in New Hampshire. We'll work on that.
You got pastrami on rye?
Yeah, we'll get it from Boston, maybe New York. I don't know. We'll bring it in.
You know, when I get closer, also, why don't I get in touch with you when I've got a schedule, and maybe find out some place in New England that we can do something.
Right. Definitely, it's going to happen. Yaakov Kirshen, we thank you. We will speak to you soon. Then,
thank you.
And Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.
Hey, toda rabba, litrot, Shabbat Shalom. Thank you all. Bye bye.
Drybonesblog.com.
You got it. I got it. We all got it.
Good Shabbos.
See you. Bye bye.
Bye.
So, Parashat Kitisa. And this week's parasha, Kitisa, the Torah tells us about how God commands Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, to take a census of Jewish people. The method of taking the census was for the Bnei Israel, the Jews, to give a half shekel coin as they walked by a procession. Why were the Jews commanded dafka, intentionally, to give a half shekel rather than giving a whole shekel? This is perhaps to teach us the importance of Achdut, the unity among Jews. One Jew gives half, and the second Jew gives half, and together they have one, an unit, the Achdut. Rashi explains the power of unity in Parashat Shelach. He quotes our sages saying that one person has the power to lift only a third of the weight he could lift if another person helped him, and the two lifted together. Spiritually speaking, the same is true. When one helps another, there is an achdut, it's a unity, and the two can elevate themselves spiritually more than if they had acted alone. This concept is one of the pillars of Judaism and is applicable today and for all times.
And we are Rachel
and Sonia.
And this is Israel is Real. Our theme song, Hine Matov, is by Rachel. You can find it at www.rachelmusic.net, rahelmusic.net. We're on the air every Friday morning, 10 to 11, on the radio WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk, and on the internet at wsmnradio.com. We've been speaking today with Yaakov Kirshen, creator of the Dry Bones cartoon series. You can find it at drybonesblog.com. We encourage everybody to please go there, subscribe. Yaakov Kirshen, drybonesblog.com. Shabbat Shalom.